Okay, good morning, everybody. How are we doing? Fantastic. Absolutely great. Day three of InfoSec. Put your hand up if you've been here all 3 days. Good. Who's here for their very first InfoSec? Good, quite good numbers. Excellent, I hope you're enjoying it. I'm Dan Raywood, I'm the editor of InfoSecurity Magazine. And every year here at InfoSecurity Europe, we induct someone into what we call our Hall of Fame. This is kind of a lifetime achievement award. Which celebrates the achievements of internationally recognized information security visionaries, luminaries, practitioners, and academics, and advocates as well. And members of the Hall of Fame meet the following criteria. They have an internationally recognized and respected information security practitioner or advocate background, and have made a long-term and clear contribution to the advancement of information security. Now, some past inductees have included Bruce Schneier, Dan Kaminsky, Neera Jones, Graham Cluley, Rick Ferguson, Fred Piper, and in the last couple of years, Jack Daniel and Eric Cole. Now, this year's inductee has no exception. He is a leading consultant in his native Ireland. He is a globally recognized name in information security, speaking at conferences all around the world and featured in media all around the world, including some that I've written for. And his expertise is second to none. I've literally just been on the side of the stage talking about GDPR with him, which I didn't realize he was doing that, but turns out that's another thing he knows all about. So I've known him for the nearly 8 years I've been writing about security. And, well, I'm delighted to welcome into the 2016 Information Security Hall of Fame, Mr. Brian Honan.
Cheers, Dan. Thank you.
Welcome. How are you?
Thank you. Good. Thank you.
Excellent. Well, here we are on stage. It's day three. You've probably come into InfoSec, I wouldn't say longer than me, but it's...
Feels like it.
Well, this voice going, actually, yeah, it does feel like it. But when did you first come to this show?
Oh, God, I think this is probably my 11th or 12th year coming to the show.
Yeah. And how have you seen, obviously the show's changed quite a lot, different venue for a start. How have you seen, you know, the industry change around this particular exhibition, you know, with new companies coming in and... new speakers.
Yeah, I think every year you come to InfoSec, it's for me, it's quite interesting. As an independent consultant, we don't buy or resell any services or hardware or software. So we come to InfoSec to get a good feel of what the trends are in the industry, what vendors are out there, and get to know what are there. So we've seen some stalwarts that have been regular at InfoSec, and then you see some companies who use InfoSec as a way to launch their way maybe into growth or they being purchased by other companies. But we still have a lot of the focus tends to be very much on technology and the products, as if that's going to be the silver bullet that's going to make everything secure overnight. And, you know, we could go out and we could buy every single product out on the floor there, install it in all our systems. It's still no guarantee we're going to be secure. It takes one slip up, one person to click on a link in an email, somebody to do something in the wrong way or whatever, and we end up with a security breach. So it's to me the problems we have are still the basics, the good IT security, information security hygiene. We're still not getting a lot of the basics right, and no amount of technology, I'm afraid, is going to fix that.
Right, I see. Well, certainly, yeah, something that we're going to address today. But let's talk a bit about your how you got into security. What's your background? Have you got, you know, a computer science degree like we're all supposed to have? And
actually, no. I have no formal third level qualifications in IT at all. Actually, I have a diploma in human resource management. So I suppose that's the human element, I suppose, is important in security anyway. But I started my career back in the 80s when I was about 5 years of age, working for Ireland's largest life assurance company, Irish Life at the time. Mm-hmm. And started with their IT department in their office systems team, which was a small team looking after Wang mini systems and these new things called PCs that were just launched by IBM. And I think there's about, when I started, there was something like five in the whole organization. It was still very much a mainframe base. But over the years, the company moved and migrated systems down from the mainframes onto those platforms, obviously trying to make sure that the same enough security were there. So it was very much, to me, that's the hook that got me into security, was how do we make sure we keep the same levels of security on these devices devices as we did in the mainframes. Mm-hmm. And I left them in the mid-90s to join a Swiss consulting firm. They were based out of Dublin, but with a Swiss parent company, and providing advice to a lot of their clients on a similar way of moving their systems down onto PCs and minis and stuff. And then in 2000, I joined a company called Connotech, which is, back then we was calling an ASP, but nowadays we'd probably call it a software as a service. It was probably, the cloud was still around back then.
Right.
And I was global head of operations for them. And we provided a lot of online foreign exchange solutions, so real-time foreign exchange solutions for corporates and banks to work with. So obviously security was a key thing to that. And then became general manager of a managed service security provider, and after working for them for a while, decided, you know what, it's time to maybe start working for myself.
Yep.
And back in 2004, set up BH Consulting, and haven't looked back since.
And that's been you now for 12 years now then?
Yeah. Yeah.
So tell us about BH Consulting. Is it just you, or do you have other people with
No,
you?
There's a team of us. We've just if you take full-time, part-time, and associates, we're just now under 10 people.
Okay.
So and we're continuing to grow.
Yeah.
Thankfully. And we focus primarily on giving clients strategic advice on security. So going in and helping them talk to their board, talk to their audit committees, develop security strategies, develop policies. Do a lot of work with 27001 and helping clients move towards there. And we do a lot of work with incident response. Unfortunately, no matter how well you prepare or how much you try to prevent security breaches, you're still going to have security breaches. And we've helped manage some breaches for a number of our clients.
And is it, are you mostly working with companies in Ireland, or is it UK as well?
No, we have clients all over the world.
Okay.
We have clients here in the UK. One of the other reasons I come to InfoSec is it's a great chance to meet people, and both your peers and friends in the industry, but also clients that are based here in the UK. They tend to come here, so it's a good opportunity to meet them here. But we've clients in the US and throughout Europe as well. We're a security company and security consulting firm, but we actually are strong advocates of using the cloud. And if you use it properly, it actually can be a very secure way of doing business. And it's allowed us to grow our client base beyond just being in Ireland, so we can have clients all over the world using the cloud and the internet to collaborate with them and work together with them.
And how do you find the state of security in Ireland? I know it's a pretty big country, sort of one city, it's obviously one main city. But is it advanced? Do you see it's advancing, or is it pretty advanced already?
Well, I think Ireland is in an unusual situation. Firstly, we are becoming, as probably people are well aware, the one of the tech centres of the world. And from a cybersecurity point of view, if you look at Ireland, you can see a lot of the major vendors have their European centres there. So you've got Symantec, McAfee, Trend, FireEye,
Facebook, Dropbox.
You've got Twitter, Dropbox, you've LinkedIn, Amazon, AWS, Google. So even non-core security companies, but cloud providers, still have their operations there, and they require security professionals to do that. So there's a big opportunity or community of cybersecurity experts in Ireland. But you also, outside the tech industry, Ireland is very good for promoting itself in the pharmaceutical arena and also in the financial area. So you have a lot of multinational pharmaceutical companies or financial centres being set up in Dublin and in Ireland, and they also require security professionals as well. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, we have our own indigenous banks, etc., that need security professionals, and then quite a number of very innovative and interesting security companies providing solutions, and there's a few of them exhibiting here.
There is. Well, one or two we know about. And, I know you used to work with a guy from Waratech, was that right?
That's right, yeah.
Yes, and they're out on the show floor. But it's an interesting area, I guess. There's major banks, there's Allied Irish Bank, there's Bank of Ireland, and there's all these other kind of big universities in Dublin as well. Do you find it very centred around Dublin, or is it spread across the country?
No, it's actually spread around the country. So Dublin, obviously, is a major hub. Cork, which is down the south of Ireland, has quite a lot of, Trend and McAfee and Apple are all based down there. There's a few other security companies there. Over in the west coast of Ireland, you have Galway, which is becoming a big centre for companies as well. And then obviously Northern Ireland, Belfast is a good hub. And you mentioned universities like Queen's University in Belfast have the Centre for Cyber Research there, CSET, and they're doing a lot of excellent work there as well. And so there's a good hub there. From a national point of view, I think the challenge Ireland has faced is that it's no secret we've had a financial crisis. Yeah. The country was on its knees from 2008. So from a government priority point of view, I think the focus has been on getting the finances back together, getting the economy back up and running, sorting out unemployment, et cetera. And they're still a very big priority. And unfortunately, I think cybersecurity kind of maybe is down the list of priorities that previously, before the crisis happened, would have been higher. So we're trying to work it back up again.
Yeah, we'll get on to the Irish shirt that you work on in a bit. But in terms of the skills, then, you know, this remains a consistent issue in this industry, is about the lack of people, whether it be business leaders, whether it be people with hard technical skills. We're obviously very focused on how it's trying to be solved, you know, purely here in England or in the wider UK. In Ireland, is it a very similar situation, or do you find a lot of migration in? We could always mention Brexit if you want, but I'm sure lots of people are trying to get their Irish passport at the moment. But do you find a lot of migration in for those skills from Europe and around the world?
Oh yeah, working in Dublin is quite enjoyable at the moment, because it's become so alive as a city. There's so many different languages and cultures, etc., in Dublin now, because you do have, as I said, the European centres there, and a lot of these companies are bringing in employees from different countries around Europe to support their clients in the languages that they're used to. So it's actually great vibrancy there, and it's a great mix of culture and I suppose, you know, ways to do things, and in intellectual collaboration is key with that as well. It's good. The challenge we face in security is the same as everybody else probably in this room is facing, and every industry or company is facing, is to try to attract the talent. And it's trying to retain, not just attract, but retain talent as well. It's because of the demand, we can see a large churn in staff moving through different companies. Now they join one company and they spend a year, and then they get a better offer somewhere else, and they're in another company. Attracting people to the industry, I think, is a big challenge for us, especially if you want to make it diverse. We still are very much, you know, even within IT, which is a male-dominated industry, information security, cybersecurity is very much male-dominated as well. I think that's a big challenge we have. We're losing the opportunity to attract some great talent into the business. And I think we do look too much that you have to be a techie to be a good cybersecurity person, and that's not the case. And I'd like to point out Lee sitting there. Lee's a great example of somebody who's been a great benefit to the industry, but hasn't come in from a technical background. And we there's a lot of people out there, I think, that as an industry we're scaring them away. Because you jokingly asked me earlier on about my background, and you know, did I have a degree in computing? Mm. If I was to apply for a job to many of the multinationals now, I wouldn't get a job in cybersecurity because I don't have the minimum, you know, must have a degree in IT. And I think we're putting up a lot of barriers to attract good people, because security is not just, as I said, about the tech. It's about people skills. It's about being able to communicate with non-techie people in a way they understand, so that they can better protect our information, our companies. It's better able to communicate and explain to boards and to senior management why cybersecurity should be a big issue. Run into your CEO and saying, "Oh, we've got an SQL injection vulnerability on our website that could end up with the database being owned." They're just going to look at you a blank stare. But coming in saying we have a weakness on our website that could lead to us having a fine from the Information Commissioner's Office tends to get their attention a bit better. And it's known how those skills are, and they're not technical skills. I think we need to be, as an industry, we need to be more creative in how we recruit talent into it.
I completely agree. I think, you know, it's you look at some of the very experienced people in this industry who don't have, you know, the right certificates. So, do you have a CISSP, by the way?
No.
I have
a CISM.
CISM from ISACA, yeah, but you don't exist. Right, okay. Yeah. That's just an interesting point. I know this is from a couple of years ago now, and our mutual friend Wendy Nader raised this issue about, you know, not having a CISP or not renewing the CISP and all that sort of thing. So we'll move on to the cert thing in a second, but we want to talk about how connected organizations should be tackling cybersecurity incidents, because that was, you know, that's something we want to cover this today. Is this, you know, connected organizations? How would you understand the term connected organizations? Is it companies or branch offices, or is it globally connected organizations?
I think it's, to me, a connected excuse me, to me, a connected organization is any company that's connected to the internet.
Right.
You know, once you're connected, you're connected. It's not just your own organization and its branch offices or regional offices or whatever else. It's, if you're connected to the internet, you're connected to an environment that you're sharing with every other individual and every other company in the world. It's, you know, if you were to open up a physical branch office in Kensington High Street, you would go through certain ways to make your branch office secure from a physical point of view. You put alarms on it, you put locks on the doors, you know, you might have monitoring of the alarms 24 hours a day, or security guards there as well. When we connect onto the internet, we need to do the same thing as well. We need to make sure when we're connecting to the internet that our systems are robust and secure. And, you know, we talk about connected enterprises. One of the best connected enterprises I know of is the criminal underground. Mm-hmm. They are so well connected. Some of them have customer service portals that they can sell their toolkits, etc., to other criminals. They actually have better customer support than a lot of professional legal companies do themselves, and offer very good SLAs and money-back guarantees. But they will talk to each other. And we've seen a lot of this with the likes of ransomware attacks, or DDoS attacks, where certain victims will pay up. That gets communicated right around their community, so that, you know, one gang might just have ripped you off, and then suddenly now another gang knows how to target you. Mm. Or they know where your weak points are, and these people are highly coordinated, and, you know, unlike us, they're highly competitive because they want to make money as well. But they realize working together, they're able to make more money. And we need ourselves to work together better as communities, and not to be as wary or afraid of, oh, commercially sensitive information, or my competitors might know something about our security. Like, we all are following industry good practice. Mm-hmm. So none of us have, you know, if anybody in this room is, who's not a vendor in this room?
Who's not a vendor?
Who's probably easy? Who's a vendor? Anybody here a vendor from a vendor company?
No.
Okay, so
they're all in the booths, they're okay.
We're all consumers of their products. Now, if any of us have the secret sauce to make our organization 100% secure, you're in the wrong room. You should have a stand out there and be selling your secret to all of us here and making us all secure. So none of us have the ultimate answer to how to make our system secure. But the only way we can work and make our systems more secure is working together and sharing information. And that's one of our biggest challenges.
In terms of incident response, you mentioned that BH Consulting does incident response, and these distributed networks, GDPR is coming in 2018, May 25th, I think it is the deadline. We'll probably see, read a lot more about that come 12 months' time. That's obviously going to be a massive issue. It's going to be how do you actually, you know, notification of breaches, detection of breaches, probably even the bigger issue actually in containment. Is the world ready for GDPR and if it were to start tomorrow?
That's an interesting question, Dan. Is the world ready for GDPR? I still think we're still very immature with the way we do security. Last night, somebody's asked me, you know, what do I see the trends and stuff happening? And I kind of got a bit annoyed. You know, ransomware, for example, nowadays is the big headline grabber. And we're all panicking over how do we prevent ransomware. Well, a few months ago, it was DDoS attacks. How do we protecting against DDoS attacks. And a few months ago, it was probably something else. We kind of focus on threats rather than on how we defend our networks better. And ransomware, really, at the end of the day, is just another piece of malware. It's a very aggressive piece of malware and has a major impact when it impacts. But we've been trying to stop malware for 20, 30 years, yet we still are getting those basics wrong. We still have people with local admin access to their PCs. We still have backups that aren't being verified or being done properly. We have companies that don't segment the networks. We have systems that aren't patched or antivirus software that's not updated. So all the basics that we should be doing right, we're not getting right, and therefore we end up with these breaches. And if we keep responding to the latest threat, we're never going to focus on the good things. So to me, I don't think we are. Well, we do try to focus on the prevention element a lot. The detection element, we kind of maybe give some lip service to it, but in lots of cases, the response and how we respond to security breach can actually be quite poor. But we are seeing changes. We see, you know, 5 years ago, maybe, if you suffered a security breach, it was a big thing. You didn't want it to get into the press because there was this kind of shame associated with being hacked. Yeah. But nowadays, because of so many security breaches happening, and we're going to see a lot more after GDPR, it's not that there's more attacks or more breaches after GDPR comes in. It's just that we're going to be required to report we've had breaches, so we're going to have a higher level of reporting. So the shame of being associated with a security breach won't no longer be there. It's how well you manage the security breach and how well we respond to it, how well you look after the customers, will determine how good or how well your company survives that breach.
Yeah, and I suppose it's how prepared are businesses to actually deal with those breaches? You know, in your work, do you see them actually as being quite set up to sort of deal with an incident?
I would say 90% of the organizations we deal with when they have a security breach are making the plan up as they go along during the security breach, which is not the best time to be doing your incident response planning. It's always, you know, simple things like, who do we contact? How do we contact law enforcement? And I know working with law enforcement, with the An Garda Síochána in Ireland, they want companies to come to them and tell them what's going on. Companies don't know how to contact them or what way to contact them. Yeah. So what I would ask people here today is, if you're leaving and thinking about, well, what's the most effective thing I can do after InfoSec, I would suggest have a look at your incident response plans and see, do you have the process in place to respond to all different types of incidents? If you don't, like the Société Générale, the French bank, there, if you do a Google search for their cert, they actually have a whole lot of process and procedures for their own internal cert publicly available. You can download them for free. ENISA, the European Network Information Security Agency, has a whole huge resource of tools and white papers, etc., for incident response that are freely available. But have a look at your own incident response plans. Do you know in law enforcement who in law enforcement you should contact them, how you should contact them, and what type of information they're looking for, and how you should be presenting the information to them? Do you have any regulatory bodies you have to report to? Have you got your legal people involved in your incident response process? This is not just a technical problem. This is a business problem. You have to see, well, from a legal point of view, how do we respond to this, and what information should we give out, and what information should we keep quiet about? From a PR marketing point of view, how do we make sure we get this message out in a clear and understandable way to our customers and those affected? You don't want, you know, we've seen some security breaches where the breaches happened and then there's been a period of 2 or 3 days where the whole conversation is happening in social media about, oh, such an organization got breached, but no response from the organization. You know, we should be on the front foot in that and be the people out there to have the right resources, you know, looking at maybe increasing the number of staff on your customer support desk so that when concerned customers ring in that you have more people to answer their queries. Have you integrated your business response, your incident response process with your business contingency plan? because maybe you're going to have to keep your systems down while you do an investigation, but the business still needs to operate. So have a look at maybe how you can integrate those together. So there's a lot of things we can do to prepare for an incident and to respond to it in a good way.
At that point, if anyone's got any questions, by the way, stick your hand in the air. We've got some roving microphones right here and microphones there. And if anybody over that side, there's a microphone on that side as well. I'll start with you.
There are SMEs with enterprise requirements from a cybersecurity perspective, but they just don't have the resources to implement all the processes and policies which need to be in place. How can one help the SME in this respect? Because it's a very steep learning curve for them. They don't have that experience.
It's a very good question, and it's one of the reasons I set up iResearch back in 2008 was because I could see that SMEs in Ireland had nowhere to turn to when they had a security breach, and they needed somewhere that where they could get independent advice that wasn't going to be vendor biased or whatever. What I would hope would be that we, as a community, as an industry, we could reach out to SME bodies like Chambers of Commerce or whatever, and volunteer our talking skills and go out and just present to those bodies at their meetings, at their networking meetings, to talk to them about what the issues are with cybersecurity and try and let them. I think part of the problem is a lot of non-techie people or non-security people are scared by the whole thing of cybersecurity, that they think it's this very big, complicated problem. And in lots of aspects it is, but again, 80%, 90% of our breaches are down to basic hygiene. And if we can get that done, it'll help a lot.
Just on that, you mentioned two sources for, as it were, free policies. One was SOC Gen. What was the other organization?
INISA.
INISA.
The European Network Information Security Agency, ENISA.EU. It's an EU body, so for this month, your EU money is going towards that. Who knows what's going to happen afterwards?
Great stuff. If no other questions, we'll quickly just move on to the Irish shirt before we wrap up. Most countries have a cert. A lot of other kind of things have certs, banks, financial services. How does the cert operate? And tell us a bit about the Irish one that you work with.
Yeah, so when I set up BH Consulting back in 2004, one of the things that I took on, if you like, as a personal crusade was that I noticed Ireland was one of the very few countries in Europe that didn't have a national cert. So I did approach the Irish government and tried to encourage them down that route, but as I said, financial crises, et cetera, got in the way. So as a result, I set up iResearch, which is a not-for-profit voluntary body that we provide coordination services for instance, in Ireland. So different certs offer different services. One of the key ones has been a coordination facility. So certs in other countries or security companies can contact us and say, this IP address in Ireland is hosting a phishing site or malware, or we're being attacked from that IP address. Can you coordinate with the hosting provider or the telco to get that dealt with? And that's the service we offer. Ireland does now have a national cert, which is run by the government, but again, their remit is focusing on critical network infrastructure and on government bodies. So our cert will still operate to provide the SMEs with an independent way to source information. And we run our annual conference, which you've been at down a
yes.
few times, in November. And it's again, that's a way for us to try and get experts into one room for a day, and people from the business sector can come in and learn a bit more about how to protect our systems.
Do you have a date for that yet?
November the 24th.
There you go. You heard it here. Promoting other conferences at this one, so there we go. So, we'll just how do people work with the cert? And obviously there is a UK cert now. We're slightly late to the game in terms of getting ours up, but ours is backed by the government. How do the people in this room and people listening elsewhere? How do they contribute? What's the best methods to do that?
Well, the best method to do is to find out about your certs, whichever country you're in or whatever industry in, because certain industries will have certs for those industries as well. Find out what their who runs and what their contact points are and what service they provide, and if they provide the service that you need, do engage with them. Same with law enforcement. The best way to engage with these bodies is before you have a security breach. is get to know the people there and create a relationship so that when you do have to pick up the phone or send the email in, that you're not that you're not a complete stranger.
Yeah. And talking about skill shortage earlier, one last question actually. What sort of skills do you need in this? Is it people who can speak? Is it people who can do the instant response? What kind of things do you need?
Again, it depends on the cert, Dan. So like our cert is a coordination body. So basically what we need is somebody who can, is people who have the ability to do simple things like good IP addresses, DNS lookups, find out where they're hosted, and then just be able to communicate in a clear, concise way to the victim company and say, this is what we need you to do.
Yeah.
Other certs will provide forensic capabilities or maybe even malware analysis. So it depends on the cert. They will have a different range of skills that they might need. So,
okay.
So there's no one.
There's no one thing you need. Thing. Yeah.
But I suppose with all certs, you need the ability to be able to work under pressure, because you're dealing with incidents, you're dealing with security breaches. It's not something that that you can put on the long finger and say, I'll get to that tomorrow. Yeah. Because companies are being impacted.
That's a big issue. Yeah. Great. Well, with that, we're going to wrap things up. We're going to formally induct you into the InfoSecurity Hall of Fame. I'm going to invite Vicky Windsor from InfoSecurity Europe to join us as well, who's just remembered she's coming on stage. So get ready. And so once again, delighted to have you on stage with us and induct you into our Hall of Fame. So join us in the middle for photo opportunity to give you a new Twitter header. I'm not saying anything about the old one. So you have that, and you get the light one. Get that and I hold that.
Well,
and
hold that. Okay.
Oh yeah. Any other camera? All right. And welcome to the InfoSecurity Hall of Fame, Brian Honer. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Dan.
And thanks everybody for coming. Thank you.
Thank you.
There we go.
Can I do like Formula One and just